Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we have another news roundup to discuss. Several TV shows were given the axe. We pick a few movies we don't like, but we look for the positive inside. And our topic this week, how the summer movie-going experience has changed over the years. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron, how are you doing today?
Whoa, I'm not there yet, sir. I'm not there yet.
I'm honestly not there either. I'm just trying to work through this being sick right now.
You're like hopped up on the queue.
Hue, and I can't taste anything because Zicam, I really need a sponsor for the show. So if Zicam's listening right now, be a good idea. But Zicam like wipes out all your taste buds and nothing just ever works anymore.
Well, that should be fun. I hope you're high as a kite.
I wish.
Not joining us this week is Amanda Sink, so there's no hello here, but joining us, the host of the Blacklist Exposed, Troy Heinrichs.
Hello.
Oh, well, I guess we do have it. Never mind. I lied.
You know, it's more charming when he does it.
It's more sincere, right? It felt like earned.
Yeah, it doesn't have that snark behind it.
Yeah, she's so snarky. All right, well, remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group. We're on Twitter, also at BuyPopcorn. First up, news roundup, guys. There's some things that happened, and I'm going to tell you the bulk of them, and then we're going to figure out what's the most important thing to you. We're getting a fifth Purge movie, July 10th, 2020, and supposedly it's going to be the last one. Right, we'll see. Disney is rebooting Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and Anna Emapour is remaking Cliffhanger with a female lead. The Wachowskis are reportedly developing a fourth Matrix film. Netflix inked a first-look deal with Dark Horse Entertainment, who are behind Umbrella Academy, Hellboy, Time Cop, just to name a few. The Batwoman TV series is officially a go. Tiffany Haddish and Chris Hemsworth are teaming up for a buddy action flick a la 48 Hours and Rush Hour from the Russo brothers called Down Undercover. My guess is it happens in Australia. And big renewal news, and the Orville's getting a season 3. This Is Us picked up an unprecedented 3-season renewal. Wow. Oh, and in the interest of global domination, Disney and Comcast have reached a deal. Disney has assumed complete control over Hulu. And lastly, we lost two entertainment legends in Doris Day and Tim Conway. Now, of all that, what really stuck with you?
Well, to give you a correction on Down Undercover. So Down Undercover seems to be a story of, let's take 48 Hours and Magic Mike and make a movie out of that.
I'm in. So far, this sounds like the best thing I've ever heard of.
I read that story and I'm like, this is going to be great.
I thought it came out of a porn flick, Down Undercover.
Ba-dum-ba-psh! Dude jokes. Well,
you know, I'm really happy to see that Orville is sticking around for a third season. That is very cool. Now, I unfortunately haven't caught this most recent season, but I'm still like it's going to show up on my list somewhere to watch it this summer. But I can't wait.
I'll give you my thoughts in a simple paragraph because I'm going to purge myself of the purge. I just wish the DC would buy the CW already. Orville is a secret gem, and second season is even better than the first. This Is Us saying that A Million Little Things is way better than that show ever was. So ABC better lock that up for 5 years because ABC doesn't know what the hell they're doing, especially after all the stuff they axed. And I don't know about another Matrix movie, but I'm kind of interested to see where it goes.
So we definitely have an Amanda fill in because he's supposed to pick one. He picked six.
I wanted to make sure that there was consistency in the show. That's all.
Yeah, there's consistency. I don't know if the Purge, you brought up the Purge. I don't know if that's really going to fly.
I guess the origin story. Why do I need another one? Is it an origin of an origin story? Well, is it in the middle? Is it at the end? Like, who cares?
Is it going to be a documentary?
That I might actually watch.
I think there already is one currently going on. It's pretty close to it. The only thing I don't think it's going to work is because you already have a TV show and you're going to have another movie and you're saying it's the last one. But if it does well, you'll still have another one. And it's actually, you know what? Good. If people, I like these movies, so good. Keep making them. I don't care. Keep making them. Crank them out left and right. I completely reversed my own opinion before I even finished my opinion.
Just put more Frank Grillo in, you'll be all right.
Dude, seriously, I would watch the hell out of more Frank Grillo Purge movies.
So is it a Matrix origin story, or is it a Matrix after the fact and it's a new Neo?
So you're gonna make it like Seven now. Okay. We don't.
Well, that's the one that interests me the most. I'm curious how they would do another Matrix movie, because I don't know how it fits in with the whole architect plan and the whole concept of the machines. And if they're at a truce, is it the machines fight back or humans fight back, or a third enemy comes introduced to it, or technically a fourth enemy, because Smith would have been a third enemy?
Well, what you brought up is that what the architect planned. And if you remember from the movies, it's actually laid out so that they can reboot it without an issue, because they mentioned that Neo wasn't the first Neo.
True.
Mm. Yeah, they could do that. There's no story elements out of there. It's actually Chad Stahelski, who directs the John Wick movies. He said that he confirmed that they are working on it, because he was a stuntman in the Matrix movies. And he's the one that confirmed that the Wachowskis are working on it. I don't think anyone knows what story they're going to go for. Is it going to involve Keanu? Is it going to involve any of the previous actors? Or is it just going to be a completely new chapter? The only thing about that aspect that concerns me, especially Troy, since you brought it up, is the Wachowskis themselves. They have proven time and time again that visually they are the best storyteller. I would argue they are the best storytellers working today, visually speaking, or at least among the top five. But there's a catch, because visually, yes, but actually the story part of the storytelling, they can't seem to ever get right. They either do too much, they try too hard, they just are grasping at straws. It's just too convoluted. There's just too many factors that don't work when they're working on the story. Now, if they could just direct the visual, they'd be great cinematographers. That's what I'm trying to get to. It worries me that they're involved because they are not good at writing a strong story, I don't believe, personally.
Well, maybe they're just overseeing it and they're going to bring in some writers to actually flesh that out.
Do you really think they would, with this being their baby, though?
I don't know.
Well, it's a little disappointing to see them going back to the well after everything else they've done.
It's because none of it else worked.
Ooh, he got some fighting words.
That might be true.
Might be.
It might be true.
I mean, box office wise and cancellation wise, it's accurate.
I mean, Justin's rolling in his grave right now about it, but technically it is wrong. Technically, they're not great movies. So why not go back to what worked? That's what Hollywood does. Go back to the franchises. Go back to keep putting out more sequels. And that's exactly what we can do. So we can market a name and they'll make money even if the movie sucks.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's true. It's true. All of this, you guys talked about 47 things. The thing that bothered me the most, or that stuck out to me the most, Tim Conway. You guys are talking about all of this nonsense. Tim Conway. That's what matters. That guy, Doris Day is wonderful too. I'm not knocking Doris Day, but Tim Conway, comedy legend, grew up with him, made my days brighter when they were sad.
Well, I agree. Tim Conway is a sad loss. But Troy, is it Aaron trying to make himself a better person by pointing out that the loss of somebody is the one thing that stuck out to him?
I'm just upset with the loss of NBC content on Hulu. That's all.
Wow.
That's like losing an arm to him right now.
Wow. Tim Conway died and you're like, well, I got stuff to watch. He had his time.
Hulu's my jam. And if I keep the consistency going, so it's your Amanda's too. So
Troy's an absolute goonie, man. He's like, it's his time up there. It's my time down here.
It's Disney's time everywhere.
All right. Well, speaking of shows that got canceled, let's talk about the TV graveyard. The networks just axed a bunch of shows. Here are the biggest ones. The Cool Kids, Fam, I Feel Bad, The Fix, For the People, Happy Together, The Kids Are All Right, Lethal Weapon finally got put down, Life in Pieces, Murphy Brown, The Passage, Speechless, Splitting Up Together, Star, Whiskey Cavalier, and Fresh Off the Boat. Wait, nope, that wasn't canceled. Constance Wu just wanted it done. Also, Empire was renewed for a sixth and final season. No word on Jesse Smollett, and Blindspot will return for a fifth and final season. Any of those hit you particularly hard?
For the People, truly the biggest loss in the bunch. No surprise, ABC, when you take out news, when you take out reality, and you take out sports, ABC is worse than the CW, I feel. And I hate to say that because I love A Million Little Things, but ABC is terrible. I mean, it's Big Four. Like, it's not even part of the Big Four anymore because they just can't figure out what the heck they're doing. So to get rid of For the People, to get rid of Whiskey Cavalier, these are two shows that are just fun shows that people can just come and enjoy without having to worry about mythologies and serialization and long breaks. I mean, they were two short season shows that were only 10 to 13 episodes each. So to lose those two, I think ABC done wrong in a lot of ways because they have zero plan.
What's For the People exactly?
For the People was a Shondaland show, not run by Shonda Rhimes, but it was part of the Shondaland family. And it was starring Britt Robertson and Hope Davis. And it had basically the public defenders versus the prosecutors in the federal court of the Southern District of New York, which is one of the most prominent courts in the country. So to watch them do law and battle in the courtroom back and forth while they also battled in their personal lives, outside of the courtroom, I thought it was a really great show and it was really well done. It, you know, charismatic actors, and you connected with people and you felt for them, especially some of the episodes at the end of season two. So I think it's a huge loss when you have Station 19, which is actually horrible.
I don't even know what Station 19. There's so many shows. I don't even know what they are.
Yeah, I don't
know. It's a spinoff.
I don't know any of these things that are listed, with the exception of like Lethal Weapon and Lethal Weapon. Murphy Brown, I remember that from the 90s. I can't believe that they came. I didn't even know it even came back.
How do you? Well, I mean, you only watch Netflix, right? So it's kind of hard when it's not on Netflix for you to know anything about it.
Yeah, Netflix and Amazon Prime. I mean, those are my two stations.
Those are like stations now, right?
Pretty much.
Seems like it.
I was saying it ironically, but then I was like, that's not ironic.
No, it's kind of true. Troy, let me ask you a question. You're the TV guy, because you watch more TV than anybody on the planet should. What is there really? I mean, we were always talking about like fall TV and the season finales in May. Is that really even a thing anymore? I mean, the way that TV is now, is it pretty much a dying breed?
Well, you've said it on this show before that you make fun of my spreadsheet every year.
Yeah, because he does a spreadsheet of all the fall TV. It does help, though, for you.
I will tell you this. I didn't even know it was Upfronts this week.
Wow.
So if that tells you something, that's how much I care about broadcast television right now, that I didn't even know that Upfronts was this week. I thought it was next week.
And explain to people what Upfronts is, because a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, so Upfronts is when the networks get together and they decide their fall schedules and they play cat and mouse. They drop all the shows that Aaron just mentioned. They pick up all the new pilots. They put them in the schedule. And then they basically present their schedule to the advertisers from Madison Avenue in New York so that they can pre-sell advertising for the fall, betting on shows that may or may not last past the third episode.
That's crazy, man. It's crazy.
It's pretty nuts that Troy didn't even know this was Upfronts. I think somebody mentioned it in the group earlier in the week, and I was even surprised that it was happening. Like, that's how disconnected from network television I am.
This may be the first year I actually do not make the spreadsheet.
Wow. Is it you're just done with TV? Network TV? You're just done?
I'm not necessarily done with network TV. I'm done watching it on the network schedule with the network's requirements. I want to
amen, brother.
Sit down and just, if I want to watch Whiskey Cavalier, give me all 8 episodes and I'll watch all 8 episodes of Whiskey Cavalier. I might even buy it because I thought it was really good.
Hallelujah.
You think Whiskey Cavalier was a hallelujah show? Is that what you're telling me? Or you just...
No, I just think that everything he's saying, like, that's the reason why I gave up cable, because I got tired of cable television telling me when I need to sit down on my couch and do things, and I live a much fuller and happier life now.
Except my problem is that cable TV said, hey, could you cancel cable TV? We're going to throw the 1 terabyte data cap on you, so suck it. Because it's actually cheaper for me to keep the TV than it is to pay for the $50 unlimited plan.
That's fair. All right, so here is my, with all of that, here's what my, I guess joy. It's joy. Sad, but joy. I'm glad the Lethal Weapon drama is finally done. Damon Winans has done everything he could to get this show canceled. I really feel like Sean William Scott replaced Clayne Crawford admirably. I think he did a really fine job. I don't think it was ever as good as it was, especially the first season and a half. But I was still enjoying it, even though I wasn't. It's hard to watch Damon Wayans and not want to just, you know, yell at the TV a little bit. But he was still doing his thing. He was still doing Murtaugh, I mean, to the best of his abilities and whatnot. But apparently all that behind-the-scenes drama that a lot of people haven't heard about, that's all done. We don't have to hear about it anymore. the show's been put down. The only thing that saddens me is that Sean William Scott was really working super hard on his comeback, and I think he deserved it. He completely redefined his own role by taking that role on. I mean, his own persona, because he's always been the dim bulb, the goofball, the idiot. And here he was, this really tough, hard-nosed, flawed, conflicted cop, and he did a great job. And I'm worried that that's going to go away now, that his career resurgence is officially over. That's the only sad part of that news. But
well, maybe he can come over to Blindspot and it'll get a sixth season, because he can replace pretty much anybody on that cast and be a fresh life of blood. I can't believe that's getting a fifth season, especially after it got pulled from the sweep schedule for season four. Ridiculous.
Did you just take my big Lethal Weapon stuff and make it about Blindspot? Because you were going to totally resubmit.
No, I would.
I'm
bringing it back to Mr. Scott. Like, he's a great actor and he should come over to Blindspot and help it out.
Maybe he should just get a show all of his own.
There we go.
On Netflix.
But he hasn't had enough to prove himself for the comeback yet. To be a lead.
He has for Netflix.
This is true.
Are there any unemployed actors anymore, or does Netflix just hire all of them?
I'm going to go with Netflix hires all of them.
You go to Hollywood and everybody has to get their own steak because there's no wait staff left because they all have jobs finally. Thank you, Netflix.
Netflix just pulls everyone out of obscurity. Isn't it? What's Lemon Face Girl from the 90s? What's her name again? Renee Zellweger? Doesn't she have a career resurgence happening on Netflix soon?
Probably. I think she's got a movie coming out too.
Yeah, she does.
On Judy Garland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that going to be on Netflix?
No, I didn't know the Garland movie, I don't think so, but she definitely has a show coming out too on Netflix, and it's Netflix is bringing everybody back.
How about the Constance Wu drama? If people aren't aware of this, so this is the greatest thing ever. And the trying to walk it back is kind of amazing. She's a star of Fresh Off the Boat, which is a show on ABC, Troy, is it ABC?
That's correct.
Okay. And she's also was the star of Crazy Rich Asians, which I loved her in that. I thought she did a great job. Not as good as Gemma Chan, but she did a great job.
She's amazing and Fresh Off the Boat too.
Okay. See, there you go. And when the news broke, somebody congratulated her and she immediately said, no, it's, they said, that's great. Congratulations. You got renewed. That's great news. And she said, no, it's not. And then she started basically a tirade of swearing and complaining about it. And then, which I want to point out, there's no misunderstanding. She can write all she wants to do. There's no misunderstanding. It was very clear she was upset about the news. Then she had to issue an apology, you know, our PR person or whatever made her issue this apology. She wrote this whole very, very nice, well-articulated apology. And then at the very end, you know, after she said, it was because I had a missed opportunity. I was really looking forward to another project. It's not that I don't love the show, which kind of sounds like you really were happy to ditch it so you could go do your project, but whatever. But it was a passion project. I get it. And then she says at the end, it's really nice when people believe women. So she made it all about Me Too when it has nothing to do with Me Too. Just like everything she did was a publicity nightmare. Troy, what do you think? You're the TV guy.
No, I think it was an absolute, well, from a TV fan perspective, I think it was just absolutely ridiculous that she would put that out there, because people have jobs on these shows, right? The writers, the staff, the cast, the catering, whatever, craft services, everybody gets a job because of this renewal. So to be that selfish to put out a tweet, and you know that the tweet is going to live on forever, especially as blatantly as her tweet was, I think that is absolutely just asinine on her part. At the same time, it was the best freaking entertainment ABC has had. A Million Little Things ended.
You know, the thing I love about this whole thing was Seth MacFarlane's reaction to hearing that the Orville got renewed for a third season.
He just does a whole stream of obscenities.
That show is amazing.
Orville?
Yeah, if you're a fan of the TNG era at any point in time, this is like a throwback to TNG in a lot of ways. It's just super amazing and then makes it just accessible for the general audience. It's really a great show.
Would you recommend Fresh Off the Boat? You said she's great in it. Would you recommend Fresh Off the Boat then?
I'm not a comedy person. I tend to lean towards things like The Goldbergs or How I Met Your Mother or Big Bang Theory, which have like ensemble casts. Things like Blackish or Fresh Off the Boat, things that are stereotyping minority groups. in a way. I just don't gravitate towards those shows. But when you watch it, she's damn funny. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, she's really funny because she's like the stereotypical, you know, Asian woman driving the restaurant and yelling at her husband and yelling at her kids. And it's funny. But at the same time, it's also not supposed to laugh at it because you're supposed to be kind of PC about the whole thing. So that's why I don't support the show on a regular basis.
She's very, it's funny that you say she's laugh out loud funny, because I saw Crazy Rich Asians and she's very laid. She's very much the straight person in a way. So is she completely different on that show?
Completely different.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
So she's got range, which is probably why she's getting projects. But now she'll be the one that nobody wants to touch because she's difficult.
It's just bad, bad idea. You just don't bitch like that in public unless it's about Game of Thrones. That's the only time it's acceptable. Cover my bases. All right. Now it's time for You Can Do It. This is where each host, all three of us, we're gonna try to do what the internet seems to fail at. All right. All we see is negativity week after week, negativity. So we're going to take a movie we genuinely do not like for whatever our reason and find one legitimately positive element to it. Simple enough. It should be simple enough. But it seems like on the internet we can't do that. It's always love or hate. You can't be in the middle. So we're going to come in the middle here. John, what do you got? You can
do it. All right. So the movie I came up with, because I thought long and hard about this, because I don't really hate movies or not hate movies. But this, or maybe I do and I just put it out of my mind after a while. But the movie that I came up with that I hated and I couldn't get past it was In the Name of the King.
Oh, with Jason Statham?
Yes. Directed by Uwe Boll.
That's fair.
Jason Statham was in there. Ron Perlman, Burt Reynolds, Ray Liotta, all these people. Like, I don't know how they got this cast to work together on a movie like this, but they did, sort of. But it's got charm. Like, those actors, they know they're in the wrong movie for themselves, but they're showing up, and you got Burt Reynolds just, like, winking at the camera and saying things, and you got Jason Statham, who literally has two lines in the entire movie, even though it's, like, his movie. And yet he still seethes charm all over the place. And then you got Ron Perlman. Ron Perlman just really sets you in the mood and really gets you to understand that this is not the movie for you, and that you just to try to have fun with it, and it works for those reasons.
Okay, so would you say that it almost there's a possibility you could see where this movie could be good with a better script?
I could say that in a certain level of inebriation, this movie is amazing.
Okay, all right, Troy, what do you got? You can do it. Come on,
everything, and this will probably get me uninvited from ever coming back. I don't know, but everything about The Hobbit, terrible. Can't stand it. It was just poorly made, poorly rushed, poorly done.
Okay.
Didn't need to be three movies. All of it is just garbage. Hot, molten garbage from Mount Doom.
So far, you sound like the internet. Okay.
Right.
Except I did get to see the second movie in the ridiculously 6,000 frames per second. Like, I could reach out and touch the people because they look like real life people in a really awesome theater.
High frame rate.
Super. Yeah, the high frame rate thing, mm-hmm. which everybody complained about. I thought it was amazing. It was like watching live theater, like a play. But that's not the one thing. The one thing was smog in high frame rate, in the dark, in that definition, in that particular theater that I saw it in, was the most freaking amazing CGI thing I've seen until, of course, Game of Thrones and Dragons happened. But this dragon was like so real, and the entire dragon sequence running down the gold molten gold that gets melted and then dumped on his head, like that whole sequence, loved it. Everything I ever wanted from the smog scene, even though it was short and you really wanted more of the dialogue that happens between him and Bilbo in the books. But for the sequence and for what it was able to do, I think the smog scene worked. The rest of it was just garbage.
Hey, you came back around. Good job. Because that really seemed like, is there happy here? Because garbage, light it on fire, burned alive. Yep. Nope. There's some happiness here. Good news. All right. So I'm going to go with Iron Man 3. I don't like it. Over the years, I actually find I like it less and less. I've tried to rewatch it for years. It was the one of many Marvel movies, was the one I didn't own because I didn't want that, and Thor 2, and I still don't own Thor 2, and I won't ever. but I'm like, I got to complete the collection because I do like Iron Man. I just didn't like that particular movie. Yeah, it hasn't changed. I don't like it. But I will say, and I won't say why, but because I've recently noticed this kid in something, the relationship between Tony and Harley, the boy who helps him when he kind of crashes and burns, is the absolute best thing about that film. Tony Stark never speaks down to him or condescends. He just treats him like he would everybody else, which is how I believe you should parent, honestly. Just talk the same way you would to anybody. And he does that throughout. They have a real relationship that feels genuine. It feels honest. It feels earned. And a whole movie of that I would have watched in a heartbeat, and I'd still be rewatching it today.
That is actually a good point. That's actually one of my favorite parts of that whole movie, is his relationship with Harley.
Was the third movie the one where he plays Oprah? You get a suit, you get a suit, you get a suit, everybody gets a suit.
Yeah.
No. Yes. Yes.
It was. Yeah.
That's why I didn't like that movie.
And Pepper Potts becomes a fireball, and I think they forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's cured. What? Okay. All right. There we go. We brought some positivity in the world. Now, if you want some more positivity, go to Patreon. Our show is independently funded, and Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcasts. On the same token, we want to offer bonus content exclusively through Patreon for our supporters. So at $3, we have a monthly bonus podcast called Bad Movie Night. New episode out right now for Evolution, where we discuss a movie that critics or others deem a quote-unquote bad movie, but we like it. Then at $5, you get Bad Movie Night. Plus, there's an exclusive monthly bonus episode where we discuss things we won't talk about on a normal show and often get more personal and some behind-the-scenes stuff. And currently, John is running a special podcast called the Half Hour Power Hour, where he's covering Game of Thrones by each episode in a special Patreon exclusive series. And once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your tier. All you have to do is sign up. Patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. I mean, you are still doing that, right, John? Because if I spoke out of turn, let me know.
No, yeah, we are still doing it. It's still going strong. And we are actually July, as soon as the next season of Stranger Things comes out, we're going to start covering that week by week.
All right, now we're going to go to reviews. Troy, hit me up. I saw The Hustle. Let's talk about The Hustle real quick.
Well, The Hustle has nothing to do with cocaine and gambling and a bunch of stuff. No, it's actually about two ladies, Rebel Wilson and Anne Hathaway. They have a winning chemistry as a pair of con artists playing their trade in a stunning seaside town in the south of France. Hathaway plays Josephine, a cunning Brit, and Wilson plays Penny, a fun and free Aussie. They decide to form a pair. And I guess the question for you, Aaron, having seen this, is this a team worth being dazzled by, or do you just feel conned out of your $10 at the end of this flick?
I see what you did there. You know what surprised me? I went and saw this movie, and I did not want to see this movie. I had zero interest in The Hustle. I thought the trailers looked lame, reviews were bad, really didn't have a big need to see this one. But to answer your question, Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson, more importantly, Rebel Wilson, made a hell of a team. Made an absolutely hell of a team. It's 100% a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. So if you've seen that movie, it's the same plot points through and through, all the way through. But it's more from a woman's perspective, written by a man. Weird, but that's how it worked. And I really feel like Rebel Wilson and Anne Hathaway play off each other very well. They have a good dynamic, a good back and forth. Anne Hathaway has this weird British accent, which somehow works. Doesn't work in the trailer, but it works in the movie. And Rebel Wilson is like the worst con artist in history who somehow does a decent job. I don't quite understand it. But yes, as a team, they ended up gelling quite nicely. I actually like them together quite a bit.
And then do you think that because it is like a Dirty Rotten Scoundrels ripoff, do you feel remake, that the trailers remake. Gave away too much of the movie since we already know what it was in the first place?
Remake. It's not a ripoff. It's a remake.
It's a ripoff.
Okay. Yeah, the trailer does give away too much, but I also feel like the trailer didn't make the movie look very funny. I really don't feel like it does a good service, which is a good thing for comedy because you want to go and you want to have a good time. And I felt like a lot of the jokes that were funny were in the movie, but not in the trailer. So no, I don't think it doesn't ruin the movie, because actually the movie's better than the trailer was for once.
Is it better than Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
Okay, so here's where I'm in the minority. I don't love that movie.
That's why I asked the question.
Oh yeah, I just thought it was okay. I don't. I feel like this is pretty much on par with exactly how I felt about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Yeah, same score and everything. I would put them right together.
good enough to watch once, but never have to watch it again.
Yes. But if you're scrolling through, you're flipping the channels and it comes on, you'd watch it, you'd laugh, you'd remember, and then you move on. But it's nothing where I got to buy that Blu-ray when it hits, or I need that digital code. You know, no, it's just, you'll watch it when it comes on someday.
You know, it's funny that you said that, because I was about to say, I can't even count the number of times I've seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. But then when I would, if I'm being honest with myself, it's because I got Poppy Field into watching it.
See, it's not one you seek out, but you'll watch it if it's on. You know, that's what The Hustle is to me. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I would give it $5.50.
That's not bad.
I was just trying to put it back to my head how it could be just as good as Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Are you a big fan of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels?
I'm not a big fan of it, but if it's already been done, it's kind of hard to understand how a remake of it or a ripoff of it could be the same or better or worse. I mean, it's just...
Well, here's what I think. The difference is it's coming at it from a woman's angle, which is different. Unfortunately, the script ends up going for a lot of the same beats and plot points as the original. Instead of, I'm not one of those people that jump on that. It should have been written by a woman bandwagon, because I think anybody should be able to write anything. And, you know, the art is the art. In this respect, because of what they're trying to do, which is take a woman's version of con artist and make it their own, I think it should have been written by a woman. I feel like it could have made a bigger difference. There you go.
But isn't that what happened with Ocean's 8?
No, that was just a bad plot twist. Like, that with that movie, the cast and everything was great. And they did, yes, it was kind of a remake, but they had a major plot point that was dumb. That's what ruins that one. The biggest plot point, which, funny enough, Anne Hathaway's at the center of, is dumb. You can't get over dumb. You'll never be able to beat dumb. Dumb loses every time. Or wins, depending on what you're watching, I guess, if it's a Jim Carrey movie. Yeah, I'm sorry, John. Disappointed. Let's go to new releases. What's coming out this week? Well, here's what we know. Here are the big ones that come out that you guys already know about. A Dog's Journey has come out, the sequel to A Dog's Purpose. So we're going from his purpose to his journey. Dennis Quaid's back for that. John Wick 3. Yeah! I'm thinking he's back. By the third movie, he's definitely back. And The Son is also a star. Hits theaters on May 17th.
Also on Video On Demand, coming out on May 17th, we have Always Lived in the Castle. It's not this castle, because it's actually based off of a 1962 novel that was written by Shirley Jackson. This one is going to be about Mariquette living with her sister Constance and their deranged Uncle Julian, the trio of survivors of an arsenic poisoning that killed everyone else in the family 5 years prior. Mariquette is bold and imaginative and protects the property with spells. Despite being hated by the townspeople, the sisters live an idyllic life until cousin Charles arrives.
Sure. Wow. All right.
Wait, hang on. Shirley Jackson, she wrote House on Haunted Hill.
Yes, she did.
Okay.
And
one might say that this is probably like part of a series, potentially.
Potentially.
Whole series about magic houses.
It's like a really bad, like the scary version of HGTV is what she's doing.
Okay, what is going on this week? All right, John.
I don't know what HGTV is. I don't have cable, but don't hold it against me. A violent separation on VOD May 17th. What do we got here? Two brothers struggle with the terrible truth behind the tragedy that aims to tear three generations of a family apart. Woo! Directed by Kevin and Michael Getz, and stars a whole lot of people I don't even know. Oh, Ted Levine's in it. That's awesome. Good for him.
Put the lotion
Claire Holt.
In the
no, that's awesome too.
So your medicine kicked in because you got a little energy boost there. That was fun. It was like watching what was it? The Dirt when Tommy Lee comes back from his heroin overdose. Like, whoa!
Well, he doesn't have broadcast television, so VOD gets him excited.
God, we're losing. All right. All Creatures Here Below comes out on Video On Demand May 17th. Desperate for money, Jensen and Ruby impulsively commit a crime, which sets in motion a series of dire events. Now on the run, the couple seek refuge in Kansas City, Missouri, a place filled with dark secrets that still haunt them. Stars Karen Gillan and David Dasmalchian. Yeah, that's probably wrong, and I don't care. Now, of all those that we mentioned, what is your pick of the week? What do you want to see the most? Troy, you're our guest. What do you want to see the most out of all those?
Well, I already knew that the sun is also a star, so I'm going to pass on that one and go see John Wick 3. Saturday night, 7:30.
Oh, you got any of your tickets? You got?
I sure do.
Reserve seats and the whole deal, right?
You know it. AMC Prime, baby. Dolby Atmos all the way.
Yeah, I think this whole idea of having A Dog's Journey and John Wick 3 come out at the same weekend is it's kind of like awesome marketing. Because like, if you want A Dog's Journey to make any sort of money, you put it next to John Wick.
Because as soon as you walk out feeling like, man, I love dogs. Oh, thank God, we have A Dog's Journey playing same time.
Right. Yeah, pretty much. I need. Yeah, pretty much. So, but John Wick 3 is my movie.
No, triples all the way across the board. Yeah, there's no way that I don't see John Wick 3 when I get back. I'm actually backpacking this weekend, which really sucks. But I don't think I can get spoiled on John Wick 3. I know what's going to happen. He's going to kill everybody. So, boom. Can't wait.
Well, if there's any drive-in theaters left in the entire United States, they should pair up A Dog's Journey with John Wick 3. Because that would be an awesome pairing.
That would be great. Which one would you put first, though? Do you want to see dogs the killing?
Dog's Journey, because the kids are still awake.
Okay. Look, kitties, look. And here's what happens after you kill a dog.
Right.
This man will come for you. Don't ever be mean to animals. Oh, it's like a life lesson. Now we go to our From the Outside In topic. And this week, it's how the summer movie experience has changed over the years. So what we're going to do is talk about how movies have evolved. I guess we're going to take it by three specific-ish decades. The 80s, the 90s, and the aughts, which I guess the aughts runs a little longer than that, but you get the gist of it. So each one of us are kind of going to run over what those decades were like for seeing movies and how summer movies have really, really changed from where they were to where they are now. We're going to start in the past. All right, so summer in the 80s, we're going to talk about that first. The 80s are still, to this day, my favorite decade to go to the movies. Everything about it felt magical. It was like a special treat, and it was the dawn of the blockbuster. So movies just keep getting bigger and bigger during this entire decade. Throughout the decade, it just got bigger and bigger. And no season was ever bigger than summer, which back then, by the way, went from Memorial Day weekend through whenever school started. You guys remember that? Like, that was summer.
Yep.
It was the end. It was the era of high concept films, big budgets, simple descriptions, big movie stars, movies like Beverly Hills Cop, Top Gun, Back to the Future, Rambo, Die Hard, Batman, and Ghostbusters. It was all. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I specifically remember as a family going to see Batman and how amazing of an experience that was, because we didn't as a family go to the movies that often. But Batman was one movie we had to go see.
I remember standing in line for Batman probably for 4 hours, I think, like opening weekend. Do you remember that? I don't know if it was like that where you saw it, but it was a good 4 hours. We had to wait for that one.
I'm trying to remember. This was during the summer in which because for a little while there, we were living in Panama, and then we'd come up for a month to be in Florida. And and that would be our time to go see movies and go do stuff like that. And yeah, that was... Yeah, there was a line. Now that I'm thinking about it, there was a line for sure.
Yeah, that was a thing back then. Lines. Real lines. Not like the kids today, they're so cute with her. I ain't waiting in line for 20 minutes. Oh, yeah, that's adorable. That's fun. It was also the prime era of Steven Spielberg magic. Whether he produced or directed, there were so many classics during the 80s, especially during summer. Raiders of the Lost Ark and all of the good Indiana Jones movies. Gremlins, Poltergeist, E.T., all of these things. Just amazing, amazing entertainment that came from Steven Spielberg. This is before he went into his drama phase.
And it is a good genre of movies when it comes to Steven Spielberg doing that. Again, I have fond memories of seeing Gremlins with my family, a movie in which like it was surprising to go see with my family because it really was something that neither one of my parents would be really into. But they had a party watching it because my older brother and I were like, kind of cringing at everything on the screen, and my little sister was like laughing her happy little head off at every scary moment. So it was a fun experience.
Yeah, and I don't remember going much to the movies at all during the 80s in the theater, at least. So I was just thankful VHS was around, because we watched most of our stuff after it came to tape.
Really? Were you guys poor?
Or necessarily poor, but I mean, you're still talking lame. You know, I was still under 10, you know, for most of that decade. So just, you know, trying to, I mean, there was the whole, like, is it PG? Is it PG-13? Does PG-13 even exist? So you have that going for you. And then just my brother was younger because of that. So he was definitely under 10 still for most of the decade. So trying to get to the theater was a challenge.
That's a good point. A lot of people still don't realize that summer movies, or specifically Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Gremlins, are the reason why PG-13 was created, because they were so violent as PG movies that they had to come up with another rating, which I believe Spielberg was part of getting that initiated. So they came up with another rating to kind of let people know, hey, this is not quite PG. This is a little scarier. You might want to make sure your kids are teenagers. So boom, that came out of that too. And Red Dawn, if nobody knew, that was the first PG-13 movie. You're welcome. Fun fact. So the average ticket price ranged from $3 to $4. Okay, so it hasn't changed. People keep thinking it's like grown astronomically. I really don't think it's that bad compared to, that's 30 years ago. But the average budget was around $18 million back in the 80s. That's insane. George Lucas's THX sound system made its debut. The first movie to be shown in a THX certified auditorium was Return of the Jedi.
Wow.
Man, that also had a long ass line. VCRs became prominent, so we could actually enjoy what we saw in a theater many months later at home, like Troy said, whenever we wanted. That was a big luxury item back in those days. Sequels began taking off, and every successful horror movie had about 10 of them. John Hughes came around, reminded old people that teenagers had feelings too. TV actors actually became big summer movie stars, but back then it was completely different because it was rare. Now you've got movie stars doing TV, and you've got TV jumping to movies relatively easy, like Constance Wu did. But back then, that was an anomaly. It was very rare that ever happened. And when it happened, it usually didn't bode well. There's very few exceptions. And then Tom Cruise, Harrison Ford, and Arnold Schwarzenegger were the biggest movie stars on the planet.
God, so many things just come to mind when I think about the 80s and those summers were. Especially going to, like, that was the first, there's three exact experiences that I have as a kid going to the movies in the 80s, which was Gremlins, Batman, and Return of the Jedi. Mm. Those are the only three movies I ever saw in the theater then.
Really? The yeah. only ones?
Yeah. We didn't go to the theater. Now, it had nothing to do I had everything to do with accessibility, because we were in Panama, and like there was nothing like a close movie theater to go see around us. So it would always be when we came to the States for that 1 month on a vacation that we'd finally go see a movie. And it'd be like one if we were lucky.
Is it sad every time you say Panama, I hear Van Halen in my head? Panama! Bum, bum, bum. No?
Okay. No, it's not sad. But when I was a kid, I used to think that Van Halen really loved coming to Panama.
It's awesome.
And like, I really, like, I sung that song, like, it really meant something to me, and then, like, one of my friends was like, you know, there's a Panama in Florida, right? And then it just ruined it for me.
Well, for me personally, summer in the 80s was the era of discovering why I love movies. It was drive-in theaters. That was huge for me. I love drive-in theaters with my mom and my friends. Sometimes you'd be way too poor, so you'd sneak somebody in the trunk. I don't know if you guys ever did that, but we did that a lot. You just, like, stick them in the trunk with all the snacks. And if you got lucky, you got them in. And then you just come pop the trunk when nobody's looking. Which I don't recommend because it's illegal. It was mowing lawns just to pay for my ticket. Maybe some popcorn, which you never got a refill for, by the way. So that's, like, a new thing because refills didn't exist back then. If you want another soda, you're paying for another soda. If you want more popcorn, you're paying for another popcorn. Guys are spoiled. We are. Right. It was sitting in a quiet theater where everyone respected the rules and they respected your enjoyment. Now, to be fair, they didn't have smartphones. So what are you going to do? Beep somebody? I don't really think that's going to be that exciting. I think people put that on vibrate automatically.
Not quite in the 80s yet.
They had beepers in the 80s, didn't they?
They were there, but they didn't really hit it until the 90s.
I'm pretty sure.
I'd say early 90s.
I'm pretty sure I had a beeper, man, because I remember getting beeped a lot and, like, people beeping you, so you turn it upside down and it'd say boobies or something.
Right. No, I didn't get my first beeper until high school, so like 92, 93.
Well, yeah, but you lived in a third world country.
I was living in the States as of 87.
Oh, I feel like your mother didn't love you enough, because if she did, she would have got you a beeper. All
That's
right.
probably true.
So there were the other problems that you had with summer movie going, which were theaters would always sell out. So you had to get in line early, like we talked about, and be willing to wait to see the big movies. It was just like going to an amusement park. And people don't understand that unless you lived it. But it really was like that. And people would do it because we had a lot of things back then. We had like patience. We had time. We weren't like stuck nose deep in our phone because life's so important. We have to keep moving. We have to keep going. We were able to relax. And those lines, which I'm sure people would hate now, we loved them. It was so exciting to be the first one to be able to see a movie that you knew there were only three theaters in town that were playing it and three screens. That's all you could get it, you know, and you had to wait in line. That was so fun. I love that.
Yeah, you're speaking for yourself on that one, because lines for me were like an anathema. I would destroy people over lines. I can't have it.
The best thing about the 80s is that the internet didn't exist. So to avoid those lines, you just waited 3 weeks and it came to the budget theater for a dollar. Yes, one whole dollar. So you saved $3 so you could buy the popcorn and soda and you didn't have to wait in line at all. It was great.
That's not great. Then you're the last person who sees it.
No one else is telling me about it because there is no internet.
Yeah, but then you go to the dollar theater, and that's the theater where they don't care what they're doing, and like the floor is super sticky, so you have to peel your feet off.
My dollar theater was mint. I mean, that place was clean as a whistle.
Dollar theater right next to my house now came out of the 80s, and I get like there's stuff there that was from the 80s. I'm pretty sure there's some good old-fashioned 80s cocaine somewhere embedded in the floor.
I want to go to Troy's theater with a black light and see if he still feels that way.
No. I didn't say it was that way today. I said it was that way in 89.
I'll get in a time. That's what I'm doing. First, if they invent time travel, that's where I'm going. I'm going back to your freaking theater, and we're going to take a black light, and you're going to see what you sat in. It's going to scare you. I worked in a theater. I know what they do there in budget theater. There's a lot of humping. All right. One of the other things that was cool is, you know, you might not be able to sit where you want to sit back then. You might have to sit in the front row, and you were just grateful you got in. That was part of it. But then afterward, you know, in line, you're talking to people because you're excited about what you're going to see. Unlike John, who just needs a curmudgeon, even as a kid, a lot of people were excited about what they're going to see. And you're talking about it, especially like Return of the Jedi, you know, the last two movies. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Nothing could spoil it, you know, back then. So you had no idea where it was going to go. Like, how are they going to resolve this? Can you believe that that's Luke's dad? You know, stuff that we couldn't believe back then. And then after you come out, as opposed to now, like, here's the difference between watching a summer movie then and watching a summer movie now. Is back then, strangers would stand in the hallway after we got done. We'd talk about whatever we just saw. Sometimes you get a new friend out of that deal. Whereas now, everybody, what do? They hop on their phones, they post on Facebook that they're here or that they just saw it. Here's their quick thoughts. They usually talk to the people they're with after they do this, which does nothing but say, you're not as important as my internet friends. Back then, everybody around you were the only people you had to talk about it. So you immediately did that and you would do it for a long period of time. It was an experience. Now it's just it's another thing you do throughout your day. Then it was actually a moment and an experience.
But these are my friends. I mean, I'm talking to two of my friends now on the internet.
You know what I'm saying.
I'm telling you guys first how the movie was.
You know what I'm saying. When you like get out and you're there with your family, but the first thing you do is hop on there and it's like, hey, I just saw John Wick 3 and boy, I loved it. And then you know, post that on Facebook and then you're like, so honey, what'd you think of the movie? That's what I'm talking about. And there's a lot of that. I see it every time I go to the movie. Every time I go to the movie, I see that.
I mean, I can see that if you're talking about the 90s. 80s, no, because if you're standing in line, you're standing in line with your family, and no one wants to stand in line with your family, because then you just get pushing and shoving. You're hitting your brother. Don't make me get out of this line.
Look, I may have fond memories of my family, but like the three of us did not like each other growing up enough to actually talk to each other.
What kind of... You guys had a sad... This is... Man, 80s summer movies in the 80s were fantastic. Loved it.
No, they were fantastic. That's one of the reasons why I can't like. But my family is one of the reasons why I can't handle lines. I got like, you know, my brother would get bored and he'd whoop my ass, or my sister would get bored and she'd just start crying randomly and point at one of us and like, you know, watch us get our ass whooped by our parents. You know, that's just the way it was.
So it feels like you guys didn't have the same experience as I did in the 90s or 80s.
80s.
Sorry. 80s. Oof.
I saw three movies in the theaters in the 80s. Three movies.
I think I'm the same as John. I'm like Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, and Gremlins, I think, were the three.
Wow. You guys were just sheltered. Yeah, that's what I was looking for, and that's one I'm going to use. Sheltered. Yep.
It's called VHS and air conditioning. It worked great.
I really think you were, yeah, there's that. My parents fancy themselves as trying to eventually develop their own home rental business in Panama, because they would come to the States, record everything they could, and then we would have walls of tapes of stuff in Panama to watch.
They should have made it, and they should have made a commercial where they just go, come to Panama!
All
right, tell us about the 90s, man.
All right, so the 90s was the decade of money. It was the mega spending and special effects decade. You guys remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. 94, baby.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah. It was also the era of the mainstream film and indie cinema. It was the rise of the computer-generated imagery and the decade of remakes, re-releases, and more sequels. More and more sequels.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know what? Indie cinema, that's a good one. I didn't even think about that, but that is really where independent cinema just took off.
Yep. In that decade, we had every major movie company came out with a indie branch of their company.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's also the decade in which home viewing really started booming, and we had the growth of the home rental businesses.
DVD, does that include DVD? I assume
that includes DVD.
Wow. That makes sense. I mean, VHS was cool, but they never made it affordable. Do you remember that? It was always $80 because they just wanted you to rent them. And, you know, except for like really big movies, some of those you could buy for $20. But DVD made it very accessible to everybody at home.
Absolutely. Because the processing was so much different and cheaper. And like when DVD came out, our collection exploded.
Yeah, because I could burn so many movies.
Right. So the other thing that happened a lot is the mid-90s, you know, excessive perks and demands of the megastars. Like, this is where the stars really started taking control of their business. It was more money. They wanted script approval. They wanted directorial approval, casting choices. You had so many stars like Tom Cruise, Sylvester Stallone, Mel Gibson, Eddie Murphy. All these people are making these sorts of demands on studios. And that's when we really helped push and skyrocket the cost of some of these movies.
Would you also say that is when we started our, and I would call it a downward slide, but a lot of people might not, our obsession with celebrity and fame. Yeah.
I don't know if that is the start of it, because now that I'm really thinking about it, you had a lot of what was going on in the 90s and 80s and even the aughts that was going on in the 50s. It just became more and more accessible. So it's really the accessibility that increased our downslide.
Yeah, it's the internet 94, 95 that really made that happen.
MySpace. Yeah. Let's all blame MySpace because it doesn't get credit for anything else. Might as well.
Yeah. So for me, the 90s was the era of adventuring to the movies more and more often. Like, it was something that my brother and I started developing a relationship as friends that he and I would go see movies from time to time. And then we'd get out of the movies and actually have these conversations. From there, it grew into something where I started with the occasional girlfriend. I'd go to the theater with her a lot. And eventually, the biggest thing that I remember about the 90s and how my viewing changed was, by the end of the 90s, I would be going to the theater with an army of 20, 25 friends.
Really? Like, you just had a posse?
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, because I hate lines, I've always hated lines. I the person I was in Fort Lauderdale was somebody who knew how to charm and make friends, and I had friends everywhere I went. So I would go to the theater, and instead of going up to the box and asking for my ticket, I would just walk right in, find the guy that I knew that I was working there, and ask for my ticket. So you had a whole lot of people waiting in line, but I already knew the guy, and I would just go in, get my tickets directly from somebody who was working there, and then go out to my friends and share the wealth and tickets.
But just the people that you liked and were friends with. So really, you made a whole bunch of enemies at the same time, not just friends.
I mean, tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato, whatever.
You know, whatever, potato, it's okay. You know, it was just, And for me, the 90s really cultivated this love for movies because it became like, that's when I realized that movies are very much a communal experience. Going with your friends, going, and then after the friends, you're at some hole in the wall, greasy spoon diner, just talking about what was going on with that movie. And that was my experience every single weekend, especially during the summer.
You know, the 90s for me are very much centered around three films, I would say. Twister, which is probably kind of like a personal realization. Like, I always loved the idea of tornadoes. I saw one with my grandpa when I was a kid. I was just fascinated. I think absolutely fascinated with them. And the fact that they brought tornadoes to life and made them very horrific on the big screen and everything else, that was very... It really awoke me to the possibility of cinema, as well as Jurassic Park. That was a big one because I've never seen dinosaurs done. I mean, every dinosaur I'd ever seen in any movie to that point had been the kind you laugh at, you know, or some bad Saturday morning cereal or something. I mean, it just was never good. And finally, we had dinosaurs that scared the piss out of me, just the absolute piss out of me. And then we had Phantom Menace. We had Star Wars Episode One, which just was a completely everything right and wrong with the 90s in one movie.
Absolutely. That was something. I remember that experience of seeing Phantom Menace where I loved everything about it except for the story.
Mm-hmm.
I loved everything about it except the 6-hour line we waited in the 100 degree heat to buy tickets. And then the 6-hour line that we waited in order to get our seats after we got our tickets.
I have a funny Phantom Menace story because this goes back to my ability of going in and getting tickets and not having to worry about lines. So I got my friends and I, the whole slew of tickets. And then the girl that I was seeing at the time was with me. And so, but one guy did not show up on time to walk into theater. So I sent everybody in to go grab our two rows of seats because that's how many we were. We were able to take up two rows. And I'm waiting for my buddy Hal out front, like I'm always waiting for my freaking buddy Hal. And finally, and I'm looking at my watch and he's still not there. And the movie is just about to start and I'm missing previews. And this was a time when I lived for previews. And finally, he shows up and I get in there. And when I get into where my girlfriend at the time is, I look over and my buddy Steve sitting next to my girlfriend, and he didn't leave a seat for me. And so ooh. I walk over.
Ouch.
And I look at her and she's like, "Hey, we were saving the seat for you." I was like, "Uh-huh." And he's like, and he looks at me and looks at her and he's like, "What do you mean we're saving the seat? I'm sitting here." And I'm like, "Dude, that's my girlfriend. You're totally trying to mac on my girlfriend in front of Star Wars. Do you know what kind of ass beating you're going to get?" And that's when he realized the mistake he made.
All I know is that story was a very remnant soliloquy to Game of Thrones this week, because I had high expectations that story was going somewhere else, and it just went to a natural conclusion that I really wasn't happy with.
That was a nice way to tie it to nothing completely related whatsoever, but also kind of slam your story, and I like that.
Yeah. It's fine. The story, I remember it being better than it was, and halfway through telling it, I'm like, yeah, this is not as good as it used to be.
I mean, I was all like, John looked over and the dude was macking on his girl's mouth, or ew. She looked over at John and then macked on him because she was like, screw you, John.
Now I'm interested again. Yeah.
I know, exactly.
Juice
expectation.
Up.
Expectation.
All right, John.
What I forgot was you had to understand who Steve was. And when you, so in our group of friends, that story is a lot funnier.
Yeah, they're not here. So
yeah, I realize that.
Is there anything left in the 90s?
No, that's everything.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad we had more talk about Hal than we did about the entire decade of the 90s.
I mean, seriously, why can't he ever be on time?
I don't know.
We were supposed to hang out this weekend. He couldn't show up on time.
Maybe he doesn't love you.
He probably doesn't.
His smartphone didn't pop up that the ticket was waiting for him in his wallet at this time is when the movie starts.
Oh my God, Fandango's amazing for that.
Exactly right.
Troy, tell us about Summer in the Aughts, 2004. Well,
if high school and college were my 90s flair and actually got me into movie reviews actually for our radio station and our school newspaper in the late 90s. So I was all gung ho about going to the movies in the early aughts, but the aughts had me moving to Chicago actually for the first time. And I got a job, my first real job, still there today. I got married. I got two kids in that decade. And so I went from seeing movies at the front end of the decade to seeing like no movies at all, which is pretty sad because in the 2000s, it basically was a great decade of many inventions and innovations and trend changes in Hollywood. We basically had the return of the Hollywood musical in the 2000s. We had advancements and trends in animation with Pixar rising to glory. We had the comic book based movies start off there in the aughts as well, as well as the inception of digital downloading for movies. The first time you could do that legally with the iTunes movie store. And then you had a bunch of foreign influence in the market as well. So it really interesting decade for a lot to happen there.
You know, what's funny. I think I get caught up in nostalgia and stuff, and you forget how much of that has just happened in the last 19 years. I mean, comic book movies really weren't that big. I mean, we had a few Batman, Superman, and that sort of thing, but that really didn't take off until X-Men and Spider-Man and Blade, I guess you could count Blade, but really mainstream comic books didn't take off till the 2000s. And Pixar, that's a great point, because that really redefined how we view animation entirely.
Yeah, because when I think of the aughts for me specifically, and maybe it's because I became a dad in the 2000s, like I always thought summer equaled Father's Day. Father's Day equaled Pixar. It was guaranteed that there was always a Pixar movie there, from Toy Story 3, which came out in Father's Day of 2010. You had Up, Father's Day of 2009. You had Ratatouille, Father's Day 2007. WALL-E, Father's Day 2008. Cars, Father's Day 2006. Nemo, Father's Day 2003. I mean, literally, summer in the aughts meant Pixar to me.
You know, and the aughts was a time in which I was in art school, and that would be like the time in which I was really into animation and everything that had to do with Pixar, with traditional animation, anything. And so, yeah, like anytime there was a Pixar movie to go see, we would go in drones to go see it.
You know, what's funny, the aughts are also when the summer season expanded, where it went from Memorial Day and it rolled back to the 1st of May. And I believe it started with Spider-Man. I really don't think it did that before the first Spider-Man, when that released the first weekend in May, and it just was huge, absolutely huge. And from there on out, that was just the start of summer.
Yeah, because I think X-Men was Memorial Day weekend.
Yep, X-Men, Lost World. I mean, just all these movies kept piling out before. It was always Memorial Day weekend. Then Spider-Man took a gamble, I guess. People can correct me if I have, maybe there was a movie before that I'm just not recalling, but I don't think, no. I mean, there were other big movies. Like, I know Shrek came out in earlier May, the year before Spider-Man. I mean, there was stuff that did, but yeah, I really feel like Spider-Man cemented that first weekend, like just made it a whole thing.
Yeah, you had in order from 2000 to 2010, you had X-Men, Shrek, Spider-Man, Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one. Anchorman in 2004, Revenge of the Sith in 2005, Mission Impossible 3, which redeemed itself from Mission Impossible 2. Superbad came out in 2007. And the funny thing is that in 2007, you also had the third Shrek, the third Spider-Man, and the third Pirates, all by 2007.
You know what's actually interesting is that during my research for the 90s, all the big movies of the 90s were all in June and July, mm-hmm. until Phantom Menace came out in 1999. That was May 19th.
Yeah, and most of the big movies, I think, in this list came out either in May or June. Mm. So there is some credence to Aaron saying that it pushed back into May for the start of the summer.
Well, both. I think what he's saying is, because I think Phantom Menace came out the week before Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And then Spider-Man, a couple years later, dove for that first weekend. So, you know, it seems like Star Wars opened it up and Spider-Man just said, you know what, let's go for it.
Let's try it out.
And it stuck. It stuck.
And to round it off, 2008 had The Dark Knight, 2009 had Inglourious Basterds, and 2010 had Toy Story 3. So I think the fun thing about the aughts is that you had like the first kind of foray into the comic book movies, but you also still had individual properties, like unique new things, like with Superbad and Inglourious Basterds and Anchorman. And all of this is happening through a decade where you had a whole bunch of just crap happening in the world. You're talking about the U.S. not participating in the World Expo for the first time in 2000. You got 9/11 in 2001. You got the Iraq War happening through this whole thing. The Freedom Tower broke ground in 2004. You had the first space shuttle flight in 05 after Discovery blew up in 03. You had Hurricane Katrina is going on in 05 and 06. Mm-hmm. You got the JFK airport terror situation that happened in 07. And then you had the H1N1 swine flu, a global pandemic. First time something has been designated a global pandemic since 1967 with the Hong Kong flu hitting in 09. So you have this whole world just kind of falling apart. And I think it's really great that the aughts allowed us to go to the movies and actually escape all of this bad that was happening in the world and cheering for our superheroes and cheering for our toys and cheering for our fish and cars and an old man with a balloon.
Aw, and his dead wife.
I was holding that back.
You didn't actually have to say dead wife. Jesus.
I do. I'm trying to emphasize the point. She's so dead. That's why he's so sad.
I can't remember which movie made me cry worse. Was it Up or was it WALL-E? I know I cried at both of them.
It's got to be Up.
Up, you cried in the first opening 10 minutes.
Up, I did cry in the first 10 minutes, and that was ugly crying.
I mean, it was more of a joyous cry in Toy Story 3 when you saw the opening movie reel of Andy getting older, and then, of course, mm-hmm. Fat Buster walks in, and then you just lost it. Like, oh, Buster!
And the aughts were also, I mean, you mentioned the comic book movies, but also the beginning of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. 2008 was when Iron Man came out.
It's true.
That was the beginning of what we know now as billions and billions of dollars of Disney money. Everything's Disney money, though. That really doesn't end up. And you know what's funny? Is since Spider-Man came out, almost every year, the number one, except for a couple of years, almost every year, the number one movie has been a comic book movie.
Was that the year X-Men 3 came out? Or Dark Phoenix, or the first time?
Like, and if you go pull the top 10, maybe not the top movie, but if you pull the top 10, you're going to have like 4 to 5, if not 6, comic book movies in the top 10, which a lot of people think that's all that comes out, but it's really not. There's actually only a handful that come out every year, but for whatever reason, like, that's what people gravitate towards. And it makes me wonder, since it started in the aughts and you were talking about all the tragedy and times haven't exactly mellowed out, maybe that's why they're still so popular all the time. People just, they're always looking for a reason to escape. That's why they don't need high art. They don't need a constant character development. Sometimes you just want to go and have fun. And this is what the movies bring, especially summer movies.
Not only that, but it is a bit of a sociological experiment to look at, because, you know, the superhero movies are inherently a good guy going up against insurmountable odds and coming out winning. And in some ways, we all want to be able to be that person, even though that we never really put in that sort of position. So being able to see ourselves as somebody like that is something that brings us a little bit of joy and escapism at the same time.
And especially needed after 9/11 happens at the start of the aughts.
Yeah.
And then we're like, oh gosh, we are able to be attacked. How can we be bigger and better in order to fight back?
You know what else happened in the 2000s? Netflix started streaming. That's when, in 2007, Netflix started streaming movies at home, which gave people the option to watch a lot of blockbusters from their house, probably from the previous year at that time. But it was the beginning of John's life.
You know, you're making a joke, but, and it's funny.
Kind of, but not really. It's the truth.
And it might be sort of close to the truth now. However, I resisted the entire idea of Netflix when it first came out.
The DVD Why? Version or the streaming version?
Streaming version.
Yes, both. I didn't care for the streaming idea. I didn't want it. I wanted my cable. I wanted my blockbusters, and I wanted to be able to pick out the movie and go there. I didn't want to have the crappy internet connection to get in my way, even though we had cable internet at the time. I didn't want any of that. And yeah, it's the person I was then was very much like, I need A, B, and C. And wait, I'm still that person.
You're crazy, though. The DVD streaming, the DVD service was amazing. Because that was that's how you watch TV shows, the way we watch TV shows today. It allowed you to get 4 discs of 24 and just plow through them, send them back, and get 4 more 24.
The aughts was a scary time for me. I was not somebody who could be trusted with mailing stuff back to anything because I would just end up owning it. Like all you got to do is peel this piece of paper, put it in this paper envelope, drop it in your box, and that's it. I can't do it. I don't know where my box is. Like it's right there in front of your apartment. Nope, don't know. I've never been there. I didn't even check my mail through a good portion of the aughts. Like I didn't bother. Why do I need to go in this stupid box to get paper out of it? Why? I know what my bills are. I go and pay them online. I could not be trusted with this whole going to the mail thing.
You couldn't pay your bills online in the 2000s?
Yeah, you could.
2000?
Not all of them.
Not very many of them.
I didn't have very many of them. I went to art school. I didn't have a lot of bills.
He had one. Art school.
Okay, well, then you can abstain from this part of the conversation, because Troy and I would say you and I both loved Netflix, the DVD service. That was fantastic.
That was my life.
People might not even remember it, but what plan were you on? I got like two DVDs, and like you send one back, you get one, you send them both back, you get two movies. I mean, you just had this like waiting list, this queue, where you're constantly praying you get the big movie, and you never did. You always got the next one. You know, how many do you have in your service?
I was trying to remember if they ever went to a 4-disc plan, because I felt like the more discs they added, I absolutely signed up for give me as many out at one time as possible, because that's how I was able to go back and get the first season of 24, because I caught the second season of 24 on broadcast. And then I was just like, oh, there's like, you can get like tons of TV shows on this thing. So then I like the whole queue is like TV shows of seasons. And I'm like, man, there's like 7 Things of Gilmore Girls on here. Well, how'd that happen? Tracy, why are you in my Netflix account?
So
and then we started screaming for like multiple profiles, and that's how multiple profiles happen at Netflix.
So you were binging before binging was a thing.
Exactly.
That's the way you do it. It was amazing to me when streaming came out. I specifically remember I've been horribly wrong about entertainment, well, many times, but these are two very specific examples. One, I was very wrong about DVD. I said that would never be a thing. I don't know why. I just never thought it was going to be a thing. Was wrong, horribly wrong. Two, Netflix streaming. No, I'm not going to do that. Because, you know, at the time when it first came out, everything was buffering. If you had an internet connection, I mean, everything buffered. Nobody wants to watch video that way. I never, maybe it was my naivete, but I did not foresee a future where they could finally get the signal down to where it was watchable. And they did it in record time. I mean, do you remember that, Troy? Do you guys, Troy, you probably did because John came later to the party, but they were actually getting consistent streaming signal, even when you weren't bringing, you know, 100, you know, gigabytes down a second or whatever. I mean, back then, internet was weak and they were still being pretty consistent with the video signal.
By TiVo Premiere, I think that was the fourth version of the TiVo, and it had Netflix on the TiVo. And I'm like, this is amazing. I'm already hooked up to the internet for the TiVo service. So yeah, hit me with Netflix and it worked great. It was amazing.
I remember the later part of the later to middle part of the aughts in which buffering was a massive problem. And it wasn't because we had slow speeds or anything else like that. And the reason why I know this is because I could have my Blu-ray player connect to Netflix and it would buffer all the time. I could have a computer connect to Netflix and it would be fine. I could connect to Netflix through an Xbox and I would have no problem with it. So it was just the Blu-ray player or whatever other device going to Netflix in a specific way versus going through a computer that would cause the buffering.
Yeah, it was all about the OS it was running on at the time. Now OS is ubiquitous. It's either some kind of form of Chrome or some kind of form of iOS.
Oh, no, it was throttling. It was throttling. It's because when you were connecting through like Xbox Live, you would go to the live server first and then you would go to Netflix. But the Blu-ray player would go directly to Netflix. So it was buffering specifically done by Verizon at the time. That's who I had service through. And it was proven well into that whole issue, what was going on. Because it also wasn't just me. It was several friends were having the same issues on the same service where they would connect through their Blu-ray players and problem. They'd connect through some other device that, like an Xbox that uses sort of a proxy of its own. Then, yeah, it would be fine.
You know, the biggest change is we went... I'm sorry, Trey, is there more aughts?
Okay. I mean, it was just a pretty sad decade overall, and just it was great to have superheroes and cartoons escape from all the all the sad stuff.
And as we bring it back to the modern era, which everybody now knows, you know, the pluses and minuses for the most part of movie going in today's environment. But you know what I found to be the biggest change from now watching movies to any other time? The volume. The episode, just like we have the same problem with TV where there's so much content, it's the sheer volume of movies that are out every single week now, especially in the summer. Theaters, video on demand, Netflix, whatever it is, there's on average, and I checked this out for last summer, on average there were 10 new movies released every single week in the summer. 10.
That's insane.
Insane. Where's the frickin' money coming from, man? Who's bankrolling this? Because if you do the math, just do the basic math. Of those 10 movies, let's say on average they have, because a lot of those are very independent movies, let's say on average $20 million budget between all of them, right? Between the 10. So two of them might be hits. The other eight will not be. How are people recouping the money on this deal? I just don't understand that. It feels, blows my mind. I don't understand it, but apparently it's working, but I don't understand it.
Streaming and international rights. That's the way they make money back.
Streaming international rights, the long tail. There's a lot of the long tail happening.
It's crazy.
When you think about how much money Disney gets to make now because they never have to put stuff in the vault ever again.
So the thing I actually think about movies now versus movies when in the aughts, the 2000s, 99s, whatever's, is like my personal reaction to them. Because especially through doing the Half Hour Power Hour with Scott, I forgot how much I like just having a conversation with somebody about a show, because I don't do it that often, because I don't want to do it on the internet anymore, because I just like the whole idea of reading something and then clickety clacking and something on the keyboard and trying to get my idea out. And then to look up that before I get my idea out, somebody's already said something. And then what's the point of me being there? But stopping and having conversations with people about movies and television is something that through this, most of this decade, I've stopped doing, with the exception of the show, and I'm finding that I've missed it.
I would say the same. Just being able to go to the movies. I mean, trying to find time to go to movies with a bunch of friends. We had three of us that went to go see Endgame, and one guy had to back out. And so that same group of three is going to see John Wick on Saturday. And I'm hoping that because it's Saturday, like we all three of us can go, so that we can have that conversation after the fact with a beer in the lobby and just kind of hang out and talk to other people that are coming out of the same movie. I think that's what you miss a lot in the summer, is people are just, oh, we got summer camp and we got summer school and my kids got cheerleading practice and we got to have this thing and that. Like there is no more summer anymore. And I think that's the sad part, is that summer movies lose out because there's so many activities that the kids are going to that they're not spending time at the theater. Well, and they'd rather wait to watch it on their device at home.
And I would say summer movies, quote unquote, what used to be summer movies, are now released year round.
Yeah,
I was just about to point that out too. Like, there is no more summer, because all year long there is something great coming out with just about every single month.
I said, which is the only reason that I signed up for AMC's Movie Pass thing, the A-list this year, because I could actually look at the calendar and go, there's legitimately two movies every month that are worth going to see. And if I'm going to pay $10 for the ticket, that's $20 right there. So boom, then I get to go see any other movie I want as well.
And back to John's point about conversations, that's something I miss terribly. I remember going in the 80s and the 90s, man. You just, like, as soon as the movie was over, you go to McDonald's or you go to a bar, you go hang out with your friends, you know, whatever age you were, you would go do those things because you didn't have the internet to just jump onto and share. And I'm not knocking that, because I do think there's positive things there too, but there's something different about going with your friends, tangible friends, people that are with you, because you can go and you can have conversation, and it's not like it's on the internet where everybody can scream or seem like they're screaming because they have anonymity. You're with your friends and you guys can talk about things and have a real conversation. And I honestly believe that's lost too. Just have the ability to have a reasonable, rational conversation, because nowadays when you try to talk to even your friends, sometimes you get that, what I like to call the internet mentality, which is they have to argue with everything instead of discussing everything. Because there is a distinct difference between I'm arguing everything and I'm discussing everything. Here's what I like. Here's what I didn't like. Okay, I'm going to listen to you, and then I'm going to maybe take that into account, maybe counterpoint, maybe not, but we're going to have a discussion, which means you have to listen to the other person and you have to be open to whatever they're saying, which people don't want to do anymore. Everybody's, I'm always right, I'm always right. It's the internet mentality. Back then, you had real discussions. You could actually get your mind changed because your mind was a little bit more open. You could see things a little differently because you hadn't read 500 other comments that agreed with what you said. So you just felt more reaffirmed in whatever your opinion was. You know what I mean? That's sorely lacking today. And I feel bad because people that are young, or the youth are growing up and they're not able to have those conversations because they've never had those conversations, because everything's always been the way the internet does it, which is a completely different way of talking.
Yeah, I'm finding that I'm pulling away more and more from those internet conversations because I want to be able to, if I'm going to have that conversation or even come on the show and have a conversation about something, I want to make sure that I'm bringing me to the table and not bringing any sort of like thoughts or conceived notions from arguments on the internet. I just don't need that. I want to be able to come here and have a conversation about what I experienced. And I find that I can be really open to ideas and changes. And then, you know, with the exception of Aaron, like, nobody's calling me stupid here.
It's fair. That's fair. Is there anything else you guys miss about past summer movie watching versus now, besides Real Butter? I think that's a real thing. I really feel like we should bring Real Butter back.
I never was a butter person.
Oh my God. You're so dumb. All right. So what do you love about modern movies? What is the thing, like, today, because today we've talked about it, it's very different. What do you love about going to movies today?
To me, going to summer movies today specifically, I think I really love the aspect of the anticipation of the calendar, because you get this whole internet sensation now of, you know, here's the whole, like I said, I bought the A-list this year because I looked ahead and I was like, June there's like 6, in July there's like 10, in August there's like 3 that I really want to go to. May obviously had a couple as well. I forget, May is part of summer already, just because it hasn't been summer here in Chicago at all. It has barely been spring. But the fun part, I think, is just the anticipation. I think that you have a lot of good sequels that you're anticipating, you know, franchises that are expanding. I think those usually come out in the summer. I think you have the better chance of seeing those, A, with your children, or B, with your friends, because in the summer you do have a little bit more time, I feel, because you're not so crunched during the school year with homework and other stuff that you have to be parental responsible for. You kind of lose some of that parental responsibility and gives you a little bit more freedom in the summer. So that's why summer movie going is typically on the higher end. I know for me specifically, I have like June 1st is marked on my calendar, because once June 1st hit, I like lose all responsibility. No podcasting, no church stuff. Like, I'm going to spend my entire June at the movie theater catching up.
What I like the most about these days is that it feels like there's different versions of me from different dimensions out there who are much more successful and making things that are specifically in line with stuff that I love. So you've got Godzilla that's coming out. You've got all these comic book movies. There's sometimes a Star Wars movie here that I love or not, but there's some great sci-fi that's really happening. And the reason why I point out that it's different versions of me is because it all seems like it's made by people that I can have a full conversation with, and they have a reverence and a love for the material in which they're working with that they don't get pushed around too often, and they create something that shows that it's meant to be of quality and not just a money grab. And I love that the most about movies, especially summer movies now.
Yeah, what I love most, reserve seating.
Oh my God, don't even get me started about how much I love that. No lines, no bullshit. I got somebody bringing me a beer at the beginning of my movie, and then 40 minutes into my movie, they're bringing me my beer and dessert too. I love it.
I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about knowing where my seat is, and I don't have to wait. Now, here's the thing. I love lines. I really do. Every year I go to South by Southwest. If you ever listen to those episodes, I love waiting in those lines, because you're waiting in line with real film fans that just love to talk about movies and everything else. I don't see that when I'm waiting in line anymore, like in a regular theater. Now, when I'm waiting in line in a regular theater, I feel like I'm getting people that are just impatient. All they do is look at their phone. They don't really want to have a real conversation. They definitely don't talk to anybody but who's in their group. So it's just not the same experience to me. So I'd rather just get my damn seat and sit down and not have to get there 30 minutes early and know when I can go get my popcorn. I don't have to worry about anything. My seat's still going to be there when I get back. So I'll go with reserve seating because the lines have changed. The times have changed. But I will say I do miss the option of like just getting up and moving if you sit next to somebody who's an idiot.
That's fair. That's really fair.
So I still just do it.
Unless your shoes are stuck to the ground in the budget theater.
Well, you don't get reserved seating in the budget theater.
Wow. You're too good for it? Is that what you're telling me?
Am I too good for the budget theater?
Well, no, we know you are.
I was going to say.
is the budget theater too good for reserved seating?
I can't tell you how many times my wife has been like, let's go to the dollar theater. I'm like, why? That's where the peasants live.
God. It's a lot cheaper than 10, 15 bucks a ticket, man. You know, when you got a family, that's the way to go. It's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, don't have a family. I have just me and my wife and three awesome dogs. I keep on forgetting there's a third one.
$17 for John Wick on Saturday night.
What a horrible person. All right. Anything else on summer movies you guys want to talk about before we get into the listener comments?
No, let's hear what they have to say.
All right. Here we go. You ready?
Sure.
It was more rhetorical. Kyle Nolan says, one of the worst changes between modern, basically I'm asking them, what do you feel the differences are modern summer movies and past? One of the worst changes is that everyone is accessible and has cell phones and are constantly checking them during the movie instead of just disconnecting from the rest of the world and watching the film. All right. But he also adds, one of the best is 3D. While there may have been the odd 3D film such as Jaws 3, the technology has improved so much.
The funny part about that comment is that what you guys can't see that are listening to the podcast right now is that Aaron's reading a comment about people holding up cell phones in the theater as he's literally holding up a cell phone over the video stream that we're watching.
That's right. That's how you get things done in 2019.
You know, the thing about the 3D is I've probably seen I can count on one hand how many times I've went to the theater because I wanted to see a movie in 3D. I don't know why, but they never really did anything for me, and the 3D only worked for me maybe half the time. I think it has because I have a lazy eye or something, but, you know.
Yeah, for me, I think the 3D actually ruined my Endgame experience, to be quite honest.
Really? Why is that? I mean, without spoiling anything.
I think I would have enjoyed it better in just a straight-up 2D, like, better color, better sound in the Dolby Atmos theater, or even in the IMAX theater, than watching it on a smaller screen with the 3D. I just felt it was blurry a lot of the time, to be quite honest, because you got to wear the glasses.
There's only two movies I can think of that I really loved watching in 3D, which one of them was How to Train Your Dragon, the first one. That movie deserved to be seen in 3D. And then the next one was Doctor Strange. That was the other movie that I really loved seeing in 3D. Everything else, I got nothing out of it.
I'm a firm believer the only thing that needs to be in 3D is space.
Mm. So
things like Interstellar, Gravity, Star Trek. Ooh.
Sorry, you just reminded me. Gravity is another one I got something out of.
Gravity, I got sick watching because of the 3D, because the whole parachute scene, like that was just, that's a perfect use of 3D right there, is that parachute scene in Gravity.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, you don't, the 3D is a gimmick. Unless it adds true depth of field, because I don't need stuff flying at me in the face. I want to see distance. I want to know like what's the scope and grandeur of the 3D. And the first time you see the Enterprise like go to warp and go away from you as far as it can go, like that is a cool effect.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Sean McGuire, he says that there are no more drive-ins close to me, and that's sad. Drive-in theaters, they're pretty much going away.
I would say Northern Illinois still has old McHenry Theater still going strong.
Yeah, but there is, I mean, across the country, I looked this up before we started, there's a lot less drive-ins. I think there were 300 or something like that last year. I could have the number wrong, but I believe that's what I saw. That's a whole lot.
The problem is that you have to go and sit for like 7 hours now because each movie's 3 hours long, plus previews, plus the break in the middle. You know, people can't stay awake till 2 a.m. and they got to make shorter movies for drive-ins to work.
Do you think partly it's because we've grown so impatient with our free time? We just want to keep moving. We want to watch a movie and go. Where the drive-in requires you to basically sit for several hours.
I have no problem sitting for the drive-through, drive-in. I love the drive-in. My problem with the drive-in is that the fidelity just isn't there because these treasures of our heritage aren't able to keep up with digital technology. And so if I'm going to go pay to see a movie, I want to see the movie in the best experience possible. And sometimes that might be my house.
That's true. I'm going to have to agree with that sentiment exactly.
Jennifer Maloney said, I actually go to movies now. So apparently she didn't before. We couldn't really afford to go much when I was a kid. Now with movie passes, it's easy to go whenever I want. That's a good point. Movie pass, which led to A-List and some other stuff. That stuff has never been around. So now people can actually afford to pay a monthly fee and go to the movies a lot more, which I think is fantastic.
I mean, you get to see Endgame 4 days in a row. It was fantastic.
That sounds like a problem. All right.
Who has that kind of time?
Troy Heinrichs. Peter Dennis says, the biggest change for me as a non-American is accessibility to movies. We used to have to wait weeks or months for most studio releases, but now we get them same weekend most of the time. Also, comfort is a major difference with lots of legroom and comfy seats. Yeah, you kind of forget overseas really got a shaft for a long period of time. Now they're getting movies the same time we are.
They're getting them before us.
Yeah, sometimes. They're getting Captain America before America gets it.
Right.
Ty Nelson says, while I still enjoy it, summer movie season isn't quite as fun. Part of it is now it runs too long. I miss it being Memorial Day through Labor Day. Match the school summer. Part of that is too many summer movies. It used to be only 3 or 4 big movies came out. Now studios have something big coming out every weekend. It makes them feel less special. The last part of it is just life getting in the way. I miss being able to run off to see a movie in the middle of the day, especially on hot days.
Yeah, that was the big reason why you went to the movie theater was because it was 100 degrees outside, the air conditioning broke, and you needed to go to find an air-conditioned place. Or a giant thunderstorm was rolling through, and you had to get out from undercover because you're camping out in the middle of Aaron's favorite running place, and you have to go over to the AMC because you got to wait it out, and then the power goes out in the middle of your movie.
Do you guys feel like because there's so many movies, like what he's saying, what he said about not feeling as special, do you think that's true?
Yeah, well, I think we even said that too, because the summer movie is a thing of the past almost, because as much as we think it's May through whatever, it's also, we just talked about it. December has a whole lot of great movies. November has a whole lot of great movies. October has great movies. March, there's always a great big movie that comes out in March. Now April. So it's every with the exception of the what are we calling those months? The graveyard months of January, February, which is February.
I would disagree. I thought February this year had some great movies in February.
And last year had Black Panther. So, I mean, right. any month is fair game except September when no, that had it in 2017. So every month is fair game.
It has it again this year.
Yep. I don't think there's a graveyard month anymore.
January.
January is still the graveyard month.
Why do you think January is still? Like, of all the, every other month has found some leeway, but January is still like, we'll have a couple hits, but not much.
Because it's award season movies. And if I'm going to do the award season movies, I'm going to wait for AMC to do the Oscars award season package that they have. And then I'm just going to go sit at the theater all day and watch it in 2 weekends rather than spending time in January.
Okay, that's fair. All right, well, thanks. I hope you guys liked that. I thought that was a pretty interesting topic. I just wanted a topic that was more kind of reflection and see where we've come. How far we've come. I like that. Any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about? Anything you want to mention? Troy, you're our guest.
I would say if you like musical movies, like the La La Lands and like, I would say if you can find it in the theater still, because I'm not sure how long it's going to be in the theater, but even if you find it later on a rental, see Stuck, S-T-U-C-K, with Giancarlo Esposito from our good Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and Revolution and Once Upon a Time. Really great musical movie about a bunch of people that are completely randos that get stuck in a New York subway. And so it was actually a theater play that you actually got to watch. And watching the theater play, it was actually in a small theater. So you felt like you were actually stuck in the subway car with them.
Huh.
So that the movie actually plays out that same kind of way. So if you want to just a pick me up, good sing along kind of movie, go check out Stuck. I think it's a lot of fun.
John, anything?
I just checked out Escape Room yesterday while I was playing hooky from work because I was sick, and it's actually a quite enjoyable movie.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Aaron mentioned it because it did come out. It was one of those graveyard January movies, I believe Aaron mentioned it. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. It reminded me a lot of the same sort of idea of Cube or Hypercube, if you ever seen either one of those two movies. Mm-hmm. But it was just, well, but better done. It was better done than those. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Also, I've been watching what We Do in the Shadows. I'm a little behind, so I haven't caught up to all the releases yet. But what a great and smart show.
I'm definitely going to binge that. Is it the first season is done now?
Yeah, I think the first season is done. And I think I've been trying to avoid some spoilers, but the season finale has some pretty amazing guest stars on it.
Yeah, I can't wait to binge that. I cannot wait to binge that. I've started watching Chernobyl, which, boy, if you want just an hour of joy and smiles and feeling inner peace, then don't watch this, because it is sad and depressing. It starts out miserable and it gets worse, because it's one of the worst scenarios in human history. So and it's very well done. It's very well acted. It's very well directed. It's extremely artistic. I am very impressed with how they shot the movie. And how they're painting it kind of like a disaster film, but you start immediately when the disaster hits. So there's no buildup. There's no getting to know anybody. It just drops you in, says, here's what happened, and here's how they dealt with it. And you would think the beginning is the worst part, but it just keeps getting worse. And it's on HBO, and I would recommend it, but very much like The Handmaid's Tale, I wouldn't watch it all at once. It's sad.
You know, I was going to give that a shot, but I think that's officially landed in past territory for me.
I mean, that's in
John's It Makes Me Feel Sad graveyard.
Right.
It's an important, if you don't know about Chernobyl, I think it's an important thing to watch, because most people don't understand what happened there. And once you do, I think you'll understand why people still talk about it. It's just a weird, crazy event. And also Game of Thrones, you know, who's not watching that? We're trying not to talk about it on the show, because next week we're going to have our Game of Thrones official Hollywood Outsider spoiler cast, and also the half hour power hour, which is what John does. So you're going to be like throwing it up next week, right? You're going to do like two back to back.
Right.
That's going to be interesting.
That is going to be interesting. Although it'll probably be the first time that I've been on the show and we were doing the Game of Thrones recap that I feel properly prepared for the Game of Thrones recap.
Well, just so you guys know, Brian Williams is coming back for that. So look forward to old Brian. He's putting the format together, and he is sick of fans. So this should be fun. All right. You can comment on this episode in our Facebook group or on Twitter at Bite Popcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Please subscribe if you like the show. Amanda will be back, I believe, next week. I think she's coming for that. I haven't heard for sure. Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher. I didn't say earlier. She couldn't make it this week because she's finishing her degree and it's finals week. That's why she couldn't make it. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on Smirk and Veronica's Marshmallows, and me and my other podcast, The Blacklist Exposed and Presenting Hitchcock. And guess who else is on the Presenting Hitchcock? Oh, wait. No, you're not on that one.
I'm not on that one.
The Blacklist? Is it The Blacklist? We do The Blacklist, right?
For at least one more week. The finale is this week.
Troy Heinrichs, where can people find you?
The Blacklist Exposed, Beyond Westworld, with also Aaron Peterson. And we occasionally do one about a football team called the Green Bay Packers as well at the Packers Fan. It's not the Packers, at PackersFanPodcast.com.
And are you excited about the Blacklist season finale?
I am, because technically Aaron's seen it and I haven't yet. So I'm going to hang up with all of you and go watch it now.
It is everything I have in me to not ruin this for you. Every little piece of my soul just wants to tell you everything that happens. But I'm not going to do it.
There's like, it's evil the way you're saying it, because from what I could tell and what I know, you kind of want to do it just out of revenge.
You know what? I want to savor this moment is what I want to do. I just want to savor it. Remember, the next time you go to the theater this summer, buy popcorn.
All right, can you guys hear me now?
No.
How about now? Can you hear me now?
What?
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 What just happened?
I don't know.
John was trying to be manly.
I mean, I don't know if I try. I just kind of do.
All right. I'm with you. Are you guys ready to go?
No, my AC is still on.
Oh.
It's taking its time to turn
off. Can't even hear your AC. It shouldn't even matter.
Whoa, you can stop the mic. You can back up just a hair there, Chief.
Got it. Oh, you want me to go right into the next one? I don't know if we were talking about those or not. Sorry.
You haven't listened to the podcast for a while, huh?
I was just confused why you were doing three. Many of you just listened to that.
Yeah. Roll through them and we'll discuss at the end. Yeah.
He's not the one guy that still listens to us.